Good evening, everyone. I thank you for joining us. I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you. This is the best way, since most of the time they've got us in Washington, more so than back home. Obviously, the thing that's been on the front burner, if you would, or gaining the most attention, was the health care bill for the that was passed by the House and by the Senate this past week. I voted against the health care bill, even though I feel that we needed to do something, and I had some serious concerns with it. I voted against it for several reasons. One, the cost was too much, and at this time, I just didn't figure we could go that further in and continue the spending. There's some people that will say that it will save money over the long run, and I understand that feeling and that they have, but I was really concerned with the cost that was out there. The way they raised the money was to put taxes on people, mandate insurance, that you had to have insurance. And the ironic part is a lot of these things, are the even though the Republicans have been opposed to them, were things that they were saying and that should have been included in the plan. But it didn't do enough. One of the main things that I saw was for those people that presently have insurance in the state of Louisiana and the United States, this program, this bill that was passed, did very, very little to assist those people in reducing their out-of-pocket costs for health care and their insurance. So making sure all Americans have quality, affordable health care is important. The bill was passed. I know there's a challenge to repeal, but I think what we do now is go forward, and those areas that we find that cause problems or create problems, that rather than resolve problems, future Congresses can take a look at trying to fix those problems as they arise, so that hopefully in time that we will have a health care system that works, that is saving people money, saving businesses money, and will be a bill that will work. Again, I didn't feel the bill that was presented at the time that we had to vote that was the bill. I think it should have been more bipartisan. It should have been more inclusive, and could have been done in a fairer and better way. Recently, you've heard a lot about the Chinese firewall situation. We introduced a bill just recently that provides for insurance companies not being able to cancel an insurance policy on a home that's been determined to have Chinese drywall. And the reality of that is that they're finding that the corrosive nature of this drywall is causing light fixtures and smoke alarms and air conditioning systems and the metal parts of the homes, copper in particular, to corrode. And so it's a fire hazard. I wrote a letter just this past week to the administration asking them to take a look at the fire hazard concern and to help us determine what's the best road to try and make sure that insurance carriers don't start canceling people's insurance on their homes because they've been found with drywall, but in fact help us try and move forward to get a resolve and a settlement for these folks if we can. In the last couple of weeks, the Corps of Engineers came out with a recertification of levees, and this is going to be something that's going to affect all levees around the entire country, but they're starting in South Louisiana, mainly, I guess, because of the number of levees that we have here. And what they're basically saying is if you have a levee that doesn't meet the criteria that it was designed to be, i.e. the height, then, in fact, they're going to look from the flood insurance program and say that there is no levee existing, so therefore the rates will go up based upon not having a levee there. We dropped in a bill this past week that will give levees, will require that the Corps give any levee its due. That is, if it's supposed to be 12 feet and it's only 10 feet, you get credit for the 10 feet and you don't get charged flood insurance premiums based upon the premise that there's no levee in existence. You get credit for the levees there, and hopefully then we can get the levee districts and whoever is in control of those levees to get them built back up to the height elevations they need to be as quickly as possible, so it won't be a long-term problem. I've been involved heavily in the last month or two with an issue dealing with the Department of Homeland Security and foreign vessels and how they're treated when they come into American ports. The big oil companies want to allow these foreign vessels to come in without meeting the same standards and the same laws and requirements that American vessels are being required to meet, which then puts American vessels at a disadvantage. And being from South Louisiana, particularly the coastal area where we are, the Cajuns have really been the forerunners in offshore oil and gas service industries. The last thing I need is for the big oil companies to bring in foreign vessels and put our shipbuilders and our boat people out of business here. So I'm working with the administration and specifically with Secretary Napolitano to try and resolve this issue so that it doesn't adversely impact our area, much less our country. One of the things that's going on tomorrow that we're waiting to hear is this administration is coming out with an outer continental shelf plan, and we believe that tomorrow we may hear this administration talk about offshore drilling and increasing it and possibly even trying to start it on the East Coast. We know that there's been people criticizing the Democrats because of their energy policy. This president has said all along that he believes we need to continue to drill, and I can blame some of the people that are in the Congress with me for the policies that were there or that were alluded to. But I'm hopeful that his policy will include expansion of offshore drilling, not only in the Gulf, but also on the East Coast. The irony is, I tell my friends from Florida, Republicans and Democrats alike, that have been opposed to offshore drilling, that they need to realize the benefits of it. Being from South Louisiana, growing up hunting and fishing, those oil rigs, and particularly nowadays with the safety and the environmental concerns and the way they run those operations out there, the fishing is really good. And as I've told my friends in Florida, those white sandy beaches are really nice, but if gasoline is $4 or $5 a gallon, there won't be anybody traveling to Florida to take advantage of them. So we need to expand the drilling, and, of course, that's good for Louisiana because we've been in the drilling and offshore service industry for decades. We're going to be facing issues that are going to deal with jobs, trying to get people back to work, tax credits for small business people to hire on it, people who have been laid off, people that want to work, that are trying to find work. Nationwide. We've been fortunate down here, and particularly in the home of Terrebonne, Lafourche Parish area, the unemployment rate is only at about 5%. North Louisiana, it's about 8%, and there are parts of this country, Michigan, Ohio, parts of California, that they're experiencing 20-25% unemployment, and of course, when you get into specific parishes, counties in other parts of the country, even higher than that. So getting America back to work, getting America back to feeling comfortable, the stock market has been moving up. It is just shy. I didn't see what today's close was as I drove over here, but it was approaching a close of about 11,000 yesterday. That's indicative of what we're seeing. The profits of corporate America, of the business community, are good, but they just haven't started putting people back to work as we would hope that they would, and that's a critical element. But their profits are good, and that's a good sign. So the economy is healthy, and then people have to feel comfortable with going out and starting to spend again. Everybody is kind of hedging right now, waiting to see what the economy is going to do. Before they hire, before they spend, before they're doing anything. So hopefully it'll continue to get better and we'll move forward. But with that, let me try and move into some questions. And the first question that we'll go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Congressman, for sharing that. Just a reminder to everyone, if you would like to ask the Congressman a question, Congressman Lawson, please press *3 on your telephone keypad, and we'll get you in line. Our first caller is Deborah from St. Rose, and she has a question about the deficit. Deborah, go right ahead.
Yes, I'd like to know what Congress's plans are for balancing the budget. We have been watching other countries. They talk about Portugal, Greece right now is in the news with regard to their government's default on their loans. And I believe that the United States is in very serious trouble and very close to following in Greece's footsteps. I'd like to know what's being done to stop the spending and look at balancing our budget.
The I'm a member of the Blue Dogs, which is a fiscal conservative group. Our mantra, if you would, is about trying to get this country financially sound. One of the things, whether it's Republicans or Democrats, both parties seem to have a problem with spending. And the only group that has continued to say we've got to get this deficit down, we've got to control our spending, has been the Blue Dogs. Now, some of the things that the Blue Dogs have done is, and let me go back to the 1990s, there was a PAYGO, which is pay-as-you-go rule, that was put into law, and spending caps that were put into law back during the 1990s with the support of President Clinton at the time. At the end of his term, 8 years, we were projecting, CBO was projecting for the United States for the first time ever, if we stayed the course we were on, a surplus of $5.5 trillion in 10 years or less. Starting in 2002, the PAYGO rule and the spending cap law were allowed to expire, and the spending began, as someone said, like a drunken sailor. But a friend of mine that was in the Navy said when he got drunk, he quit spending because he just passed out. But basically, we started spending more than we took in, and just like American families, and just like state government, just like local government, school boards, et cetera, municipalities, we need to start looking at trying to balance the budget, trying to live with our means. The Blue Dogs have introduced, and with the support of the president, passed the PAYGO rule that says if you don't have it, you can't spend it, you can't start a new program unless you find the money for it. And if you can't find the money for it by cutting something else or coming up with a way to finance it, then it doesn't even come to the floor for debate. This was necessary. It was done in the 90s, and is necessary because what happens in the Congress is there's this both parties are guilty of it. They just feel like, well, the demand, the ask is coming from the constituents, and even though we have to borrow the money, we need to go ahead and do it because our constituents want to do it, and that's wrong. The PAYGO rule is backed by law, and we have to abide by it. We just introduced the Blue Dogs about 2 weeks ago, a cap, spending cap, so there can't be over, I think, a 2% increase in any program or plan in any given year. And that's to try and hold down the spending. The president's budget proposal called for about a savings of about $250 billion over the next 10 years with his budget that he proposed. The spending caps alone that the Blue Dogs are proposing would provide for $400 billion savings over the next decade that would help us put more money into the bank. Now, the last thing that the Blue Dogs have introduced, which is going to be a tough one because it's a balanced budget amendment. It involves getting two-thirds vote. Then it involves a ratification of two-thirds of the states to ratify it. But it's a balanced budget amendment, and we have introduced it. We hope we can get it moved. If it doesn't move this Congress, then starting next January in the new Congress, the Blue Dogs are committed to introducing it again and trying to push for it along with the spending caps bill. The spending caps bill, I think we will be successful in getting that accomplished. The balanced budget amendment, as I said, because you need a supermajority and then you have to have the ratification of the states, will be a tough one. Like any constitutional amendment would be. But so those are the things that we're doing. I have voted support the steps necessary to get our fiscal health back in order on many occasions, and continue to do it.
Thank you, Congressman. And if you're just now joining us, please press *3 on your telephone keypad if you'd like to ask the Congressman a question. Our next caller is Doug from Gramercy, and he has a question about the flood insurance program. Doug, go right ahead with your question for the Congressman.
Congressman, are you aware that that y'all went into recess without renewing the National Flood Program, and that now there's hundreds, if not thousands, of people across South Louisiana that have bought homes, have tried to take advantage of the first-time home buyer program, and the current home buyer program, and as of Sunday night, their loans are sitting at title companies all over the state. Hundreds of them, where they were set to close and move into their new houses, cannot close now because they cannot secure flood insurance. And right now, no one in this country can secure flood insurance. And if your policy expires as of Sunday night and you cannot renew it, what was y'all thinking about leaving on recess and leaving all these people hanging?
First, Doug, let me just say that the House passed the renewal of the flood insurance over 2 weeks ago, and the Senate and the Republicans didn't want to do anything more after the health bill passed and just basically said, we refuse to meet, we're refusing to come in. The House did its job, waiting on the Senate to finish. The expectation was that it was going to get done, but the Senate didn't do it. We passed our version two weeks ago, sent it over to the Senate. The Senate's playing politics with it. It's unfortunate. It's horrible. If you have flood insurance now, you'll keep your policy, but you're right about trying to buy a house or close on a property and that will need flood insurance, because those people will not be able to get it until the Senate and it's just the Senate that needs to come and act on it and get it done so they can go to the President so it can get renewed. I think it's atrocious. We sent letters over to the Senate and asked them to make sure it got done, because it was important, not just for Louisiana, but for all across America, and they decided it wasn't as important as we thought it was. I wish I could tell you more than that, but that's the way it was.
All right, thank you. Our next caller is Charlene from St. Martinville. Charlene, go ahead with your question for the congressman.
Okay. All right, thank you. Congressman, my name is Charlene Jean-Baptiste. I'm with Liberty Heights Community Center, and my question tonight to you is, what agency do we speak with or work through to bring Feed the Children here to Louisiana? We've been asked by Feed the Children to be the pre-positioned agency for the state of Louisiana in terms of disaster assistance for hurricane restoration. So I'm just trying to find out which agency can we get with to try and make that possible.
My guess would be that the Department of Agriculture would probably be, because they deal with surplus commodities and such as that. But I don't know that for certain. But what we will do is, I have a lady in the Iberia in the office there, Ms. Champagne. And if you would, we can do one of two things. We can either, afterward, if you can either email us, or we can get somebody to, can we get somebody on the phone with her afterward to get her phone number? And then we can track down to find out what agency would be the proper agency. But my guess is it would be Department of Agriculture, but we need to find out, and we can try and help connect you with those folks.
Okay. Is that Ms. Simone Champagne?
Janae.
Janae
Champagne.
Okay.
She's in the New Iberia office.
Great.
If you let me give you the number, it's 337-367-8231. And you can get her, call her, and then she will tomorrow track it down through the agencies and see who would be the proper connector.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you for that. And again, if you have a question for Congressman Melanfon tonight, please press *3 in your telephone keypad, and we'll collect your question. We're going to try to get through as many people as possible tonight. Our next caller is James from Gray, and he has a question about the health care bill. James, go right ahead.
Good evening. Thank you for voting against the health care bill, but I have a question.
Sure.
On the deem and pass,
right.
I understand that you voted for that. Is that correct?
That's incorrect.
Okay, it is incorrect.
First of all, the deem and pass was a procedural vote that basically is playing political games again, which these guys on both sides of the aisle have gotten so atrocious about doing. But, you know, I voted no on it. And it's, you know, we need to follow the rules as that are there. And I'm going to tell you, regardless of what's been said, Republicans and Democrats, when they've held the majority, both of them, have used the procedural movements that have allowed avoidance of some direct votes on issues. But I voted to not allow for us to do that. Take it up and let's vote it straight up or straight down, and quit playing games with it. America's, you know, there's enough false information going on out there about the way I vote, but in the way some of us vote and don't vote. But no, I voted not to allow for us to avoid a vote and let it just go over to the Senate or go into law.
All right, thank you for that, Congressman. Again, if you have a question for Congressman Melanson tonight, please press star 3 on your telephone keypad. It looks like we have another call from Labadieville, from Harold and Margaret, about the federal deficit, and they're also concerned about that. Either Harold or Margaret, go right ahead.
Charlie.
Hey, Harold.
Margaret and I, how you doing, man?
Doing good.
Nice to talk to you again.
Don't see y'all very often.
Yeah. Morgan and I are very concerned about the mounting federal deficit. Sooner or later, Charlie, I mean, you know, we're getting into our golden years. And sooner or later, nobody's going to want to buy our debt, the United States debt. And if that happens, I mean, if ever that happens, I mean, it's all over. So when are we going to get the federal deficit under control in Washington? That's my question.
That's and I addressed that just a few minutes ago. A lady had asked.
Yeah, I heard.
The Blue Dogs have introduced the PAYGO back into law, which will now require any new spending to either find a source for the money or to find a program to cut to provide the money. And if you don't have that with the bill going in, you don't get to even have a hearing on the bill. Which basically will keep a lot of these bills from coming to the floor and playing on emotions of people that want to help because it's a good process or a good thought or good program. But if it isn't paid for, we can't continue to do that. So we've done that. We've introduced the spending caps bill the Blue Dogs have. We hope to get that passed here during this summer, sometime this year, before the end of the Congress, and it'll put a cap on spending, and it'll save $400 billion over the next decade by requiring that there not be any increases. Right now, you can come in, and if you want, the president or somebody can in the committee can add 20% to any government agency program if they wish to. And of course, now with the PAYGO, you got to find the money to fund it. And then with the spending caps, we're saying you can't go above 2% increase in any program, but you still have to find it. So those two working in tandem will hopefully start the process of bringing our fiscal house in order. And then, as I mentioned earlier, we have a balanced budget amendment. That's going to be a more difficult task to get the supermajority necessary. But just like people at home have to balance their budgets and live within their means, your government needs to get there. And I think if we don't do these things in statute, then regardless of whether it's a Republican majority or a Democratic majority, or if it's next year or 5 years from now, if the law isn't there to prohibit elected officials from spending more than they take in, then we're never going to get it under control. So as the lady asked about the deficit, with what's going on with Greece, of course, that's a bad situation because Greece apparently colluded with the banks, and the banks hid the debt from the European Union, other members, and now that's putting a hardship and a problem on the euro and the entire European community that's a single market community. We are not quite as bad a shape as is Greece and many other countries. But where we are is not good, and until we start slowing it down, bringing it to a stop, and start reversing the excess spending and start putting money back into reserves and paying off the debt, we need to start being more cognizant and more aware and more frugal. And so to tell you a time frame, the spending cuts, constitutional amendment calls for a balanced budget by 2020. Is that realistic? That's a good question. But it would put into effect the necessary things, us to start putting into the works those things that help us get to a balanced budget by 2020. There's a passage of the bill first, and then I think by the year 2015 or 16, I think 2015, ratification would have to take place. So it's working out into the future to get it done, and that may lapse a little bit and go one, two, three more years than what the law we're proposing, but we need to start looking at getting it done.
Thank you, Congressman. Just a reminder, if you have a question for the Congressman tonight, please press star 3 on your telephone keypad. Our next caller is Doris from Houma, and she has a question about the new health care law. Doris, go right ahead.
Hello.
Hey, Doris, how are you?
I'm fine. Good. I want to know, how do a person that makes just barely over the minimum wage get health care?
Okay.
Health insurance.
The new bill that was just passed, and the implementation will start in segments. There will be some good things that will be coming into effect in about 90 days to 6 months. And some of the things that people could all agree on that aren't bad, waiver of pre-existing for children, small business tax credits to start accruing, allowing for businesses to take some tax credits so that when they, you know, to make sure that they can afford or have the monies available to start paying for the health care that they, if they're going to provide for their insurance. But the new bill allows for three tiers of subsidy depending on income. So once the bill takes effect and the agency issues its rules and regulations, there'll be more details. But it'll be basically working people based upon their income and will be subsidized at levels to make it so that they can afford to get insurance. And, of course, the higher your income goes, the less subsidy will be available to you. Companies that provide it, that's a whole other deal. As was discussed with this program, you would get to keep what you have if you have insurance or if your business provided or if you were buying yourself. It's hard to keep up with the cost of just all everyday lives with minimum wage and minimum wage with inflation, and that's why I voted for increase in minimum wages in the Congress to support working people, and because you're the backbone of the economy. Just because you're a minimum wage earner doesn't mean that you're not important to the people whose businesses you help keep alive. And so therefore, what is provided in this bill will be incremental based upon income subsidies so that people like yourself will be able to afford to get insurance for yourself.
All right, thank you for that, Congressman. All right, just a reminder, we have a little bit more time tonight. If you still have a question for the Congressman, press star 3 on your telephone keypad, and we'll try to get to your question tonight. Our next caller is Ann from Morgan City, and she has a question about tax benefits. Ann, go right ahead.
No, it's about the mortgage benefits.
Oh, okay.
Hello, Congressman Malone.
Hi. How are you, Ann?
Oh, I'm glad to talk to you. I have supported you in the past.
Well, thank you.
And we'll continue to support you wholeheartedly.
I appreciate that.
My question is,
yes.
What benefits are there under the new Mortgage Reform Act for people who do not qualify as first-time homeowners?
Okay.
Also, they're current homeowners, but they're not first-time homeowners.
The first-time homeowner credit, if I remember correctly, is $8,000. If it's an other than first-time, I think it's $6,500. And but if you would go, if you've got a computer, if you would go to IRS.gov and click on the click on the link there, and it's on IRS.gov. There's something called Free File, F-R-E-E-F-I-L-E, that allows everyone to file for this credit, as I understand it. It allows you to file for free, is what they're telling me. But they can give you the specific information, and the procedures should be there. And if you should have a question that my office can assist you with, if you don't find exactly what you're needing, the closest office to you in Morgan City is in Houma, and that number is 985 872-4449. And Jerry Terrio is in that office and can take your inquiry and try and help you get the answer to it.
Okay, thank you. And if there's anything you need, let me know. Thank you very much, Carl.
Thank you, Ann. Appreciate the call.
All right, thank you. Our next question is from Roy in Houma, and he has a question about hurricane recovery. Roy, go right ahead with your question for the congressman.
How you doing, Congressman?
Hello, Roy. How are you?
Oh, I wish I could say good, but I'm kind of disappointed. I'm the one that put the sign out for Rita. Have we been forgotten?
Well, and I'm sorry to hear that.
I didn't think we was going to be abandoned. And my question for you is why we didn't get much help for Ike.
Well, as far as I know, that we did get help for Ike, and most of that comes through the local parish government. That, matter of fact, there's monies that were sent down there. I think the governor was making rounds around the state handing out checks, and some of the monies that were included for that, for help after the storms, was included in there. If there was specific aid that you were looking for, you needed to go to the parish council, I would think the Office of Emergency Preparedness, and they could give you directions, or they should have been able to give you directions as to what assistance was there, you know, whether it was for your house being flooded or whether for mitigation, for lifting your house. And we're working with a committee to establish a catastrophe title in FEMA that wasn't, as FEMA, the Stafford Act, wasn't designed to handle large disasters. But, and I don't know exactly what your specific problem is. Again, I gave the office number. You're there in Terrebonne Parish. If you call my office and ask specifically, Jerry can hopefully guide you to someone that can assist you if no one has. And her number is 985-876-3033. And we can try and see if we can find out what the problem was and if there was assistance available, if it's still available, and why you didn't, if what the process is to get you some assistance.
It took them 10 months to come and elevate my house, and then we had over 6 foot of water for Rita and Ike, and we had damage done for Gustav. And I don't know about you, but when you get damage that's going to be over $2,000, and they're only going to give you $36, I don't know how much you can do with $36.
Yeah, and I've had, and I know the frustration, for Gustav, I had to replace three roofs, one on my house, one on a little rental house that my wife has, and one on my camp at the lake. And when the insurance was all said and done and about 40-something thousand dollars worth of roofs repaired, I got about $9,000 total. So quite frustrated with it, but it is what it is, and I did the best. But call my office, and they can try and help you or find out where there's a problem or if there's a problem that they can resolve for you. And there used to be, and there probably still is, an ability to appeal any decision on anything that was granted to you. Was this from your settlement you're talking about? Was this from FEMA, or was this from the parish, or was it from the state, or do you, or the insurance company, or?
Insurance company, they just gave us the, I mean, if you would only know the ruckus I had to go to, you know.
Well, the deductibles have increased, whether we liked them or not, and I understand that.
Yeah.
So if your problem was with the insurance companies and their reimbursement for your loss, call my office, and if there's any way to give you some assistance, Jerry will try and find it for you.
Yeah. Well, Charlie, when the insurance company gets into business, the purpose of them getting into business is they take a chance. And it's just like any business they got. They take a chance. And I just don't understand the way they want to work things out, because the deductible is more than we get back.
I'm quite aware. We've run into it. Give her a call, and if she can give you a hand and do something to assist you, we'll be happy to.
All right.
Thank you. Good talking to you.
All right, and our next caller, just a reminder, if you have a question for the congressman, press *3 on your telephone keypad. We got a few more minutes tonight before we're going to have to say goodnight, so thank you, everyone, for joining us. But again, if you have a question for the congressman, press *3 on your telephone keypad. Our next caller is James from Patterson, and he has another fiscal responsibility question, this time about the health care bill. James, go right ahead.
Thank you. Good evening, Congressman. How are you?
Hello, James. How are you?
Doing fair. With the past track record of government agencies and bureaucracies operating various and sundry government entities, do you think that the health care bill will be fiscally responsible as well?
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, the reason I didn't vote for it was I didn't think that it was fiscally responsible. They're proposing or touting that, in fact, the way it's designed, it will actually have a savings to the federal government in the second 10 years of over $1 trillion. In the first 10 years, I forget the exact number. But, you know, I'm somewhat leery of the numbers. I'm somewhat leery of the method because it involves mandatory requiring people to have insurance, requiring people to pay a fine if they're not insured. There's a lot of things that are in the bill that in the long run will probably be, we'll be thankful for. And those things that are problematic, hopefully the Congress in its wisdom, and I know that's kind of an oxymoron, Congress and wisdom, but hopefully in as it goes forward, correct those things that are problematic and try and make sure that it does actually, in fact, work without putting a heavier fiscal burden on the people of this country. As I said, one of my reasons for not voting for it is it was such an enormous endeavor. It was not bipartisan. I felt like it cost way too much. It raised taxes on people and businesses at a time where right now we need to get the economy back up and put people to work and not more fearful of what's to come. And it didn't do enough to lower the premiums for those people that were already paying, already have insurance and paying for insurance. They're the people that, you know, if we're going to help other people that haven't been buying insurance, then we ought to be doing something also for those people that have been buying insurance and being the citizens that we all should be, play by the rules and try and do what's right in life. And so I had some frustration with it because at the same time that I wanted to see a bill that could work for America, wanted and hoped that we would get to that point, I didn't feel comfortable with the legislation in its final form. Thank you for your question.
All right, thank you. And our next question is from Amy in Bayou Louise, and she has a question about affording prescription drugs. Amy, go right ahead.
Hi, Congressman Malosso.
Hi, Amy. How are you?
I'm good. My question is, it's a two-part question. I'd like to know how much money the pharmaceutical lobbies have contributed to your campaigns, and what legislation are you going to introduce to break up the monopoly that the drug companies have on the prescription drug market in America?
Well, first, I don't know how much they've contributed to my campaign because I don't sit and spend much time paying attention to it. But I can tell you that I have co-sponsored legislation. It's called the Pathway to Biosimilars Act. It's House H.R. 1548. It's now law since it was part of the health care bill. It allowed for these advanced treatments to get to consumers faster and more affordable. It's a generics bill so that we can try and bring down the cost of these prescription drugs. As you know, we go to the doctor's office and they want to give you the newest and greatest that's on the market. And then once they become, after 15 years and their patent expires, then they want to say that one's not any good anymore, so we're going to go back to the newest thing that's out there. And that's part of the cost, which is also involved with advertising and such as that. But In this new bill, there is included that a bill that I was a co-sponsor on that will hopefully bring down the cost. Also, in the bill that just passed, the health care bill, there was closing the donut hole for senior citizens. And the donut hole basically provides seniors with much-needed relief in the cost of their prescription drugs. The problem that you had is senior citizens, people on Medicare and Medicare Part D, when they got to a certain amount of cost per year for their prescription, then all of a sudden they just were on their own, and thousands and thousands of dollars worth of cost personally to them that Medicare didn't provide for. So what this bill calls for is for an immediate closing of the donut hole so that the senior citizens won't be faced with that dilemma anymore. Will it fix it all? I don't know, but it's a start, and if there's other things, as I've said, that we can address in lines of health care, as we find that they weren't corrected properly in this piece of legislation that did pass, then hopefully the Congress will act in a proper manner to try and make sure, because it's all about keeping America healthy and keeping health care costs down, and that's where the bill does take us, although I've got some qualms about that.
Thank you for that. Unfortunately, it sounds like we have time for just one more caller tonight. If we weren't able to take your call, please stay on the line at the end of the call, because you'll be able to leave a message for Congressman Melanson. And in the next couple of days, either Congressman Melanson or one of his staffers will give you a call or send you an email or whichever you prefer and try to answer your question for you. We had a lot of specific questions tonight about from listeners about how the new health care bill is going to affect them. Very specific examples. If you have a question like that and you want to know the answer, please call our DC office at 202-225-4031. Again, that's 202-225-4031, and we'll try to get an answer for you. Again, that's our Washington, D.C. office. All right, and our last caller tonight is Ed from LaPlace, and he has a question about the cap and trade bill. Ed, go right ahead with your question.
Thank you.
Hello,
Ed. Also.
How are you?
I'm doing great. I woke up good. Again this morning.
That on the green side of the grass, that's a great deal.
That's right. How did you vote on the cap and trade tax last April?
I voted no on the Cap and Trade Act, not only in the committee but on the floor of the House. It was a bill that I tried to get corrections or get it to be made better. It penalized Louisiana for being in the oil and gas and petrochemical business, and it just wasn't good for Louisiana. It wasn't good for my district, and so I stood in opposition to it. And
are you aware of how many? As of April of last year, we had 180 oil rigs in the Gulf of Mexico, and we're down to 40 now. And
yeah,
how would you get an economy running without energy?
And yeah, the irony is that, of course, even though oil and gas, oil is back over $80, gas is still low, but that's because there's an oversupply of gas since they've made all these discoveries in the Haynesville Shale, the Barnett Shale right. over in Texas, and the other shale that's up in North Dakota. And I wish that we could find a balance for it so that, because what I'm hearing from companies is they're not going out there and doing new exploration because the cost is of the what they're getting for a million cubic feet of gas doesn't warrant it. But at the same time, oil, as you've noticed at the pumps, going back up and will continue to go up if we're not producing it more. That's why I'm anxious to see tomorrow what exactly the president will announce in his declaration of expansion of offshore oil and gas and production in this country. And I'm hoping and I believe from what the tidbits I'm picking up is that he's going to be talking about expanding oil and gas offshore production in this country. Specifically, I think he may be announcing the allowing of that on the eastern coast, the eastern seaboard, which will raise a lot of ears of a lot of people along the east coast. But everybody wants cheap gas, but nobody wants to drill for it in their backyard. We've been doing it for decades. We've done well at it, and we shouldn't be penalized for it. The cap and trade did that. That's why I voted against it. But I appreciate your question. Also, for all those still on here, a lot of misinformation gets out on talk radio shows, TV shows, and other places. And it bothers me because it's not always, sometimes it's not intentional, but many times it is. But there are two places that people can go to verify information. One is called PolitiFacts, PolitiFacts.com. And that's a Pulitzer Prize-winning nonprofit location that basically will give you the information if you put in their search engine what it is you're looking for by subject or by title or by a person. It will generate that information for you. The other one is called Snopes, SNOPES.com, and it does the same thing. Will give you factual information. I myself receive stuff forwarded to me from friends, and some of it is just garbage, yet it's being passed around as though it's true and factual. And unfortunately, that's a lot of what people are getting, and people not knowing where to go to verify the information end up taking it as true. So PolitiFacts.com and Snopes.com are two places you can go. For a bill that's been filed in the Congress, thomas.gov is the site that you can go to. That's Thomas, T-H-O-M-A-S, .gov, and you can get a copy of any bill that's been filed and being moved through the Congress. So I thank you all for calling in tonight. I thank you for your questions. I appreciate the opportunity to get on the phone with you. Wish I could see all of you personally. Time constraints, we go in on either Monday and work through Thursday night, or we go in on Tuesday morning and work through Friday night. So my time on the ground at home is very limited. We're home for Easter right now, and my wife and I have been traveling the district and the state, and hope to see as many people as we can in the next several months. So thank you again, and it's good to be with you.